Welcome to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
If you have any questions about mortgages or real estate, give us a call at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255 or text 580-580. With Frank Napolitano and Paul Rushforth, here is Steve Gregory.
Two men and a temporary baby. You would be the temporary baby.
Oh, really?
Last show in your 40s.
Last show in my 40s.
Thoughts about retiring, Paul, now that, you know, you're hitting your 50s? Or, you know, Steve's going to be doing this into his 70s, which is not far away.
I'm ready to retire right now, to be honest. If you want to know the honest truth, yes. Yes.
We've been doing this so long, he actually won the 40 under 40.
Yeah.
I did, actually. And here's the worst part. I think I was 34 when I won 40 under 40.
Wow.
So I was a baby.
So you have a lot of experience in this business.
Apparently I do, yeah.
You must be a wealth of information.
I try.
You must be.
Paul and I just met a realtor at the Starbucks who, 34 years, and Paul and I looked at each other like, he looks so young to be doing it for 34 years.
Yeah, he looked great. He looked amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not talking about Paul.
No.
He looked younger than I did, trust me. Yeah.
How many years you been doing it now, 20?
This year is 20. I just got my 20-year pin with the Ottawa Real Estate Board. So
wow.
20 years. Yeah, it's been
any
a long
changes time. In those 20 years, Paul?
Oh, my God.
What could you buy a house for 20 years ago?
You think he'd be better at this, though.
Yeah, seriously. Seriously. Yeah, you know what's funny? I was looking.
The age tempers it, you know.
I was actually looking. My girlfriend needed a floor plan for our house that we have right now. And it wasn't on the old listings. So we went back and looked at some of the old listings. And I was like, one was from 2003, one was 2005, and I think the other one was 2017. The photography, like Greg would have laughed, the photography in 2003 and 2005 was appalling. Like it was just
yeah,
terrible.
But you needed a puff of smoke back then.
Polaroids took nice pictures. What are you talking about?
It was terrible. I was just like, we actually bought houses like this? Like it was.
How far back on MLS can you actually go to see? Can you go right back to the first listing ever?
No. I don't even know the answer to that, to be honest with you, Steve. I don't know how far you can go back. But you can go far quite, you can go back quite a bit.
So 20 years ago, a detached home in Ottawa would have been how much? 250?
Well, so the house that I just paid over a lot of money for was sold for $335, I think, back in 2003.
Well, it must be a nice house then, because $335 back then would have been.
It was a big house, and that was a nice house. I still remember as far as, you know, 5-6 years ago, I remember, you know, looking for houses for people, and, you know, there'd be 3,000 square foot beautiful homes in suburbia for like $450, $475, and that was only 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, now it's. Those exact same houses are, you know, 1.1, 1.2, 1.3. So, yeah, we've seen the prices skyrocket. But it is, I actually got a kick going back and looking at, you know, the write-ups were terrible. The, you know, the pictures were terrible. It was a blast from the past. It was funny.
And up to what can you get a secured mortgage for?
What's a secured mortgage? You mean an insured mortgage? Yeah. Insured? $1 million right now. We're hoping that number goes up, but I'm not so sure they're going to tackle that one just yet, this budget. I think it's probably later on this year that we'll see that number go to $1.25 million.
We did get a little bit of good news, did we not? Like, I mean, I know Band-Aid. It's a bit, like we talked about, it's a bit of a Band-Aid.
Depends how you look at it.
Yeah. Well, it's a bit of a Band-Aid,
It's a small Band-Aid. You know, I like to compare it to, you know, when a kid is crying, you put a Band-Aid on him. It makes the pain go away just for a little bit, but really the pain's still there, and within 10 minutes they're crying again. So
you're talking about the amortization on new builds for first-time home buyers?
Yeah. I mean, it needed to be for all first-time home buyers, and here they are.
Why just first-time home buyers?
Well, that's
and why just why
too.
Just new builds?
Yeah.
Well, that's the bigger question, is why just new builds when we're struggling to build houses to begin with? Is this going to motivate builders to build more? Well, the quick answer is I don't think so. Lower interest rates will motivate them to build faster, but not a 30-year ammo because the cost is still the same. And just in purposes of percentages, we're talking about a 5% increase in buying power. So last I checked, most first-time home buyers out there aren't short by 5%. Like they need tremendous, tremendous drop in interest rates for them to be able to qualify to get a first home.
And
that's
the qualifying, problem. Yeah.
The problem is qualifying. Yeah. The problem is the stress test. The problem is qualifying. because of the stress test. The problem is the biggest problem is the high interest rates. By far, that's the biggest problem. We got a little bit of good news on that front, where Bank of Canada left a rate neutral, but he opened the door to rate drops coming potentially as early as June. So at least, again, it's baby steps, but at least it's a step in the right direction, because all the previous meetings, despite the fact that we were expecting him to talk about rates coming down, he never did. He actually turned it around and said rates could still go up. So this time he totally didn't talk about that.
I like that he's, yeah, now we're seeing what we want to see. We want to see it a little bit longer though. How much longer, Tiff? Yeah.
Well, the truth is, U.S. inflation is going to be the biggest detractor
what
in interest rates
there?
Coming down.
What happened there?
The difference in the U.S. is that their mortgages don't come up for renewal. So therefore, their shelter costs are pretty flat there, because the mortgages don't renew. So unlike Canada, where our shelter costs represent, you know, 0.8% of the inflation, which would put us at our target of 2%. In the U.S., that doesn't happen whatsoever. But what happens there is that oil gets really involved there, and oil is a big part of the U.S. economy. And there, because they don't have the shelter cost increase, they're spending very similar to they did during the pandemic. So therefore, that's driving the cost up. And like I said, I was there for a couple of weeks, and I was floored at how expensive groceries are in the U.S. right now.
It used to be much cheaper than Canada. You used to be able to go to the grocery store and spend a fraction of what you would have spent in Canada.
My wife and I would go for a drive in Ogdensburg and do grocery shopping to save $20-$30. Yeah. Now, we would spend that same money in gas anyway, but it was just to go there and just to get away and go away, but not a chance now with the exchange rate. Now, again, we were going at a time when the exchange rate was pretty well flat, so therefore it was dollar for dollar. You were saving on the groceries, maybe filling up your car with gas because gas was much cheaper, and therefore it was worth the trip. Now, not a chance. Now.
You claim those groceries when you came back, though, right?
You do, because you tell them. You tell CBA.
No, you can do it, though. You're allowed.
So I'll tell you a good story. You are allowed. You come back, and I said to the CBA, here's my receipt. We went to the grocery store, and we got these groceries. And the guy goes, yeah, I pull over on the left. And I go inside, and I say to the guy, why are you in here? He goes, the guy told me to come in here, this receipt. He goes, you got groceries? That's it? I said, yep. He goes, go home. I don't know why I sent you in here, kind of thing. So you can do groceries.
Yeah, well, maybe because it was maybe booze and cigarettes or something like that.
I don't do that.
No,
that's
I know.
Me,
I'm just saying, yeah. But that's probably
doesn't
what
do
they
one
were.
Of those.
No, yeah. I was just one of those guys in a mood that day, I think, sometimes, right? You get.
But why is their inflation rate gone from 3.2 to 3.5 when ours is below 3 now?
Well, because said shelter cost.
Shelter costs.
Well, they're not moving. No one's moving.
Shelter costs aren't moving there. Everything else is moving because their economy is still robust. Where here, our economy is pulled back because people can't afford to spend money on travel, on other things. And therefore, we're seeing that number come down. But our shelter costs is what's keeping our inflation.
But there are projections in the States that rates could go to 8% there.
Yeah, that's not happening.
JP Morgan Chase is...
not happening.
No?
It's not happening. Because they can't... Like, they're struggling there. Listen, the job reports go up. Almost every single one of those 300,000 jobs that were created was a part-time job of people getting a secondary income. Again, not sustainable. It's okay. I mean, it adds to the numbers, but it's not long-term sustainable for that to happen. So I think that's where we'll start to see their inflation numbers start to come down. But ours will go down a little bit quicker, I think.
So our next inflation announcement is the 16th, right?
Coming up. There's two of them before the Bank of Canada announcement. I think oil will probably keep it at 2.8. All the other metrics seem to have been bringing it down. But I think the oil prices going up as much as they have will probably impact some of the food, because obviously oil translates to everything else. So I think we'll probably see it close to that 2.8 again, pretty flat number. But then there's another one in May. We're hoping that the one in May is the one that's going to be the critical one that's really going to determine whether there's a rate cut in June or in July.
So we get a lot of information before the June announcement.
For the June 5th one, we'll have 2 CPI reports, 2 job reports. So there's multiple reports that are coming out, 2 GDP reports, and those are the critical ones, specifically core inflation. See how that numbers. It's trending in the proper direction right now. If it continues to do that, I think there's a good chance we'll see a rate drop in June.
So we're hoping for a good result in May in order to get that rate drop.
Kind of negative, right? Yeah. We need the economy to
we're hoping for things to go down the toilet.
Yeah, we're hoping things suck
that's
so we can get the rates to go down.
That's what we need
well, you're
right.
Now. You're right. Yeah. So.
If they really go down the toilet, do you see him going more than 0.25% if he comes down?
I think the first one will be I'd be shocked if he did more than 0.25 on the first one. And even when he does the first one, I think it may eliminate, if he does it in June, it'll probably eliminate a July rate cut because it's so soon thereafter. Then after that, there's one in September. So I think if he starts in June, there'll be another one in September. Either way, I think there'll be one in September. I just think that the question is whether the first one will be in June or in July.
And what do you think? 1% this year?
I think 3/4 of a point this year. I think there'll be one in June or July, one in September, and then one in November.
That'll be great. We're already
enough to get things rolling, though?
I think so.
For 2025. I don't think it's going to make a big difference in 2024.
No.
And then there'll be another one, I think, in early 2025, which will really set the stage for a robust spring market, assuming the builders start putting shovels in the grounds too, and we start to get more supply.
Keep in mind, when they're starting to lower rates is when we're going into our slower times. So I agree with Frank in the way that the end of 2024 might be good, but I think as the rates come down and we have another one at the start of spring in 2025, I think we're going to have a strong start to 2025.
But every year you wait, the more difficult it is to afford a house because they're anticipating home values to go up, 5% this year in Ottawa?
Not to interrupt you. But I went to a luncheon this week with Sean Fraser, the Minister of Housing, and he's so adamant, and I think he's got his heart in the right place. I'm just not sure it could happen. But he made it very clear we need all three levels of government to work together, because the biggest thing that's holding builders back, apart from higher interest rates, and he kept saying DCs, and finally somebody said, what's a DC? Development charges.
Yeah.
Development charges are the biggest thing, and he actually came out and said, it's a six-figure income before a builder puts expense, sorry, six-figure income before a builder puts a shovel in the ground. That needs to be better. The governments need to work together to make sure that those development charges come down into the $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 range instead of $100,000, $120,000. So that the builders now can put up homes and the consumers aren't paying as much.
Well, there was, remember the article that, I know we have to go to break, but remember the article that came out, I don't know, maybe 2, 3, 4 years ago, saying how, builders, 25% of their cost is just permits and garbage, soft costs and garbage like that. Yeah, needs to be better. After the break, I had a conversation with a builder buddy. I'll tell you what he had to say.
521 Talk, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. Paul Rushworth here. Frank Napolitano here. Builder friends?
Yeah.
Are they optimistic? Are they happy? Do they care?
First of all, I asked him about the 30-year for first-time home buyers, and he basically said it's irrelevant. Like, it's
going to hit such a small population.
It's going to hit such a small population. We talked about, apparently it's easier to get shovels in the ground. He laughed. And I asked him about costs, like we just talked about, laughed at that as well. It's not easier for builders. It's just not. I know the government's saying it is easier. It's not. We're definitely not building homes fast enough. We're definitely not building a lot of high density homes enough.
But why wouldn't they bring these costs down? They're going to get it in tax dollars down the road anyway, and it'll solve the housing problem.
He said that when I said to him, listen, years ago, an article came out that I can't remember the number, but I think it was close.
It was huge. It was a huge number.
It was 25, 27, 28% or something like that of a builder's costs is pretty much useless costs, permits, that kind of stuff, and soft costs and all that stuff. And I said, the government's out there saying that those costs have come down and they're like a fraction of that now. He's like, no. He says pretty much, I would say probably about 25% of the home is gone into
development,
soft costs, permits, all that stuff. And he said that, they might say it's getting better. It's not getting better. It's not getting better.
If they do build a lot more new homes, how does that affect resale values of homes that already exist now? As more new homes come on the market, what happens to our market now?
Well, it all depends. It all depends. I mean, there's an appetite for new homes. There's an appetite for resale homes. But the problem is, like, the biggest issue is there's an appetite for homes, in general. Some people don't want a new home. Some people don't want a resale home. So it's not going to affect the resale market. It's just like it won't affect the new home market. But we just need more homes, more opportunity, more chances, more product, more.
If you're buying a new home, compared to the same existing home, is a new home more expensive than a resale About the same or less?
So years ago, it used to be cheaper to get a new home than it was for a resale home. And as a realtor, our thing would always be like, listen, don't forget, when you buy that new home, you're not getting eaves troughs, you're not getting air conditioning,
trees.
You're not getting blinds, you're not getting trees, you're living in muck and dirt for a year until you get your grass. You're not, you know, you got to go out and buy your own appliances and stuff out. Whereas a resale home, you know, usually you have blinds, eaves troughs, air conditioning, all that stuff included. So it used to be cheaper to buy new homes. And then as we went through the
cheaper in the short term, you mean?
Yeah. And then as we went through the pandemic, builders started, they led the way. Builders led the way increasing the prices of homes, and resale homes followed suit. And now we're about par. Like, you're looking at about, you know, the same type of money for a resale home as you would get in a brand new home. But once again, you have to pay a lot of extras afterwards when you buy a brand new home.
I'd love to know what the number is for first time home buyers that actually buy new builds.
Yeah, I would too, actually. I don't know that number, but
I can't imagine it's that high. And that's why I can't imagine this is going to make much of an impact.
It wasn't high for a number of years. I think it'll be higher now. The reason I say that is because at the prices of homes, along with the interest rates, a lot of those used to be bought up by people looking to buy investment properties. Well, you're underwater if you're buying an investment property today. A brand new build is an investment property. So I've had a number of clients over the last year, year and a half, that have called me, and because the house was delayed, the interest rates have gone up as much as they have. All of a sudden, it doesn't make any sense to close on those homes. Not to mention the fact that the value has gone down from when they bought it, because they bought it at the peak. So now their value's gone down $100,000. The interest rate's gone from the 2.5% up to 5.5%. And when you do the cost analysis, and they got to put a bigger down payment, so all of a sudden this thing doesn't make sense, and they're walking away from their $50,000 deposits. So
we're seeing that we're seeing that quite a bit now. We've seen it probably over the last year. We've seen it a lot.
On resales, you mean?
On new builds. New builds, because what's happening is people are buying these new builds, and let's say they're paying, I don't know, $700,000 for them. By the time they move into them, they put a $50,000-$70,000 deposit down. By the time they move into them, they're now worth $625,000-$630,000. Yeah. And some people are saying, you know what, I might be smarter to walk away from my deposit and not sell my house, because now my value of my home has gone down as well. So they're not in the driver's seat. So we're seeing a lot of people walk away. We have lots of clients that have walked away from new builds.
Wow.
Yeah.
RSPs now up to $60,000. That going to make a difference? Who's got $60,000?
Yeah. That was my question. It's like hardly, I don't know what the number is, but I think it's less than 5% of Canadians who are buying their first home have $35,000. So what's with the increasing it to $60,000? The only cohort it's going to help is you're eligible to take money out of an RSP if you're going through a marriage breakup, separation. So I think that will help somebody that might be in a
who's got 60 grand after a marriage separation?
Exactly. Exactly.
Unless we're seeing a lot of people that have been married for 25, 30, 35 years, and they're going through separation. And therefore, a lot of these clients that I come across do have, you know, nice, healthy RSPs. So at least it opens up the door for them to be able to use that RSP money at that point. But again, I mean, we're talking about a Band-Aid that's going to come off real quickly, because it has no substance whatsoever. Very, very – there's a lot of PR right now that's happening.
And then the fact that you don't have to start repaying it for 5 years as opposed to 2 years, like that's – I don't know. I just don't see that as having any teeth at all.
I always find this is a fun time of year when the election comes, you know, and it's, you know, all these broken promises and hot air and programs that are worth nothing come out, and it's –
Not to mention the fact that the budget is on Tuesday. And for the past week, almost on a daily basis, they've made these announcements about why hold the budget on the 16th if you're going to do it every day and just leak stories out. Like I said, I mean, I leaked the 30-year amortization last weekend, and it didn't come out until Wednesday or Thursday. I think Krista Freeland announced it, but there was already rumors going around that this was coming.
And that's because she wasn't going to do it until she heard you.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we'll go
with that. Waiting, she was waiting for your post.
Yeah, what does Frank say?
Well, I could have had egg in my face, too. I mean, if that didn't come true. Although I did say it's rumblings right now, but it did come to fruition. But, you know, I just think that there's a lot of
is there anything we're going to see in this budget that will help that they haven't announced? Anything about qualifying rates, do you think?
What we'd like to see. If we had a top five list, I mean, our list would start with lowering interest rates or Well, the only way to lower interest rates, I think Tiff Macklem's come out and said it. Government spending needs to come down. Based on this week, not happening. They're spending money like there's no tomorrow right now. And listen, they're putting it into housing, so they're getting a little bit of good PR piece that's going into housing and not the other money they've wasted on other things. But at the end of the day, you still need all three levels of government to work together, and I struggle to believe that that's going to happen nice and calmly. I think there's going to be lots of occasions where they're just not going to be able to work together, and therefore these promises are out the window, no matter how much money they're throwing at it. If the provincial government doesn't want to do what the federal government wants them to do, well, then the federal government's not going to give them the money. So now it's all for nothing. So, but we all agree that housing needs to be top of mind. Apart from, to me, I think healthcare needs to be
healthcare, right up there. Healthcare, immigration, and housing.
Yeah. Well, immigration, they're starting to do something about and lessening it. So that's good. But yeah, the healthcare is important. But the housing's critical because we've allowed so many people to come to Canada. And now there's so many people without housing. But it means nothing if it's unaffordable. Yeah. So that's the problem. I mean, if they're continuing to make development charges in the six-figure and a townhouse costs $600,000-$700,000 in a city like Ottawa, never mind Toronto or Vancouver, but in a city like Ottawa, then it's all for naught unless the interest rates come down. So
I think our biggest issue right now here in Canada, I know we have to go to break, but our biggest issue here in Canada is the healthcare. It's bigger than housing.
I think so too. If you're sick, you're definitely concerned about your
health. Funny how concerned he is about healthcare as he gets older.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm worried now. I'm almost 50 in a week, you know?
521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
We are back. Masters weekend.
Masters weekend. Yeah.
It is. It is. Boy, talk about windy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
When I was watching it yesterday, that was windy.
Yeah.
When you can't putt, like they were pulling back on putts, that's how windy it was. Like
I have the same problem with
that. Yeah, seriously.
No.
Maybe that wind would have slowed those putts down for us.
Yeah. Hey, did you guys read this survey? 3 out of 4 Canadians who don't own a property saying buying a home is probably out of reach for them now.
You know what? You say that, but we've seen, yes, our prices went skyrocketing during COVID, but we've seen them come back down drastically.
Mainly interest rates, I'm guessing.
Yeah. I'm assuming it's interest rates.
And Toronto, Vancouver, right? Yeah, so in Toronto, Vancouver, if the survey was done there, it's like, I'm not going to be able to buy it.
But the major problems are what? Interest rates, down payment, and qualifying, right?
Well, here's the biggest problem is as the rates are going to start coming down, which makes things more affordable, prices are going to go up.
Are they, though?
I think they're going up there. Yeah,
so if they go up 2 or 3%, that's not.
That's nothing. That's a usual market.
But if you think they're going to go up 10%, then I think that's going to be the problem because you're offsetting.
They're forecasting 5.
I get it, but you're offsetting the interest, lowering interest rates to the higher cost, so it's not going to get us ahead in any way.
I was in Dallas at my real estate conference a couple weeks ago, and my coach, who's pretty tuned in, is predicting 10.3% in Canada this year.
He's not alone, though. In Canada, they're saying 10. Yep. And then 10. For Ottawa, about 4.9.
I don't buy it.
Yeah, I don't either. I can't see that. I mean, you'd have to have a rate drop come.
You need a rate drop in a frenzy, right?
You need a big rate drop and a couple of them in a row to start that frenzy. I mean, it's, you know, as the rates start to come down, we don't have a lot of products, so there's not going to be a lot to buy. So people will be fighting over product again. And that's why I keep saying I would get in sooner than later, because as the rates come down, we're going to have an inventory problem again. And people are just going to be fighting over homes.
So where's our market at right now? This past week, are we seeing more listings?
We're almost at 4,000 listings, which is, you know, I say it as in that's a ton of listings, but
not really for spring, though.
No, it's not for spring, but it's a lot compared to where we were. And so that's optimistic. I mean, I look at some of the listings we're
carrying. Is it optimistic?
I look at some of the listings that we're carrying right now, and we're upwards. I mean, at one point we're at, you know, 150, 160. We're at 70, so we're carrying 70 listings right now. And, you know,
are any of those people struggling and they have to get out of their homes?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course. There's some that are, they can't afford their home. They got to get out. Like I mentioned before, I hate seeing this, but we're seeing a lot of people that are getting into home ownership and getting into the rental game, which absolutely sucks. I hate seeing that. But yeah, no, we're dealing with some people who have to sell.
And is it their hope that it'll be short term and they'll be able to get back into the market?
Yeah, the problem is I have some friends who actually did that and they can't get back into the market now, right? With the rates the way they are, they can't qualify, they can't get back into the market, and they're now trapped in the rental game, you know, paying $25, $27, $2,800 a month plus utilities, you know, plus. And by the time your month's done, there's not a lot of disposable income to save in order to have a down payment again. So I hate to see it, but it is happening.
I had a call from a gentleman yesterday. Again, this is where it's different than what you're saying, but it's because of the circumstances. In their 70s. So, well, his wife was much younger.
My age?
But by age, yeah.
And not 80s, Steve.
For them, they have a nice home, Carlingwood area, probably worth $1 million. I mean, he said 800. I said, I think it's going to be closer to $1 million because I think he said it was 800 before the pandemic. I said, if it was 800 before the pandemic, it's not 800 today. But anyway, he said, we don't have a mortgage, but we want to downsize maybe a 1-2 bedroom condo. And I said, he goes, I might buy, but I might rent. I'm thinking I might rent because if I can get $1 million and put it in a bank account, even if I took 100, 150 and put it in a fun account where we can travel, do everything else, the return I would get on that 800,000 would easily cover the cost of my condo, my rent. So in essence, I'd be in the same position. So I think we're starting to see a lot of older golden years, Steve. I mean, I'm sure you think this way. That, you know,
that's pretty much what Steve did, yes. Right? He sold his big home on the water and he rents now.
He's renting, so yeah, there you go.
Golden years, yeah.
But
you're not wrong. And listen, I'm as I'm starting to age, I'm
oh yeah, in his 40s.
Yep. I'm about to be 50. But that's something that I think about too, is how long do I really want to be in home ownership and will I eventually want to go, you know, cash in and rent something.
And come and go.
And come and go. And you know, like,
I could just see Paul complaining to his landlord.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, like, how many roofs do I want to fix? How many fridges do I want to fix? How many, you know, leaks do I want to fix? It's
Well, you don't fix them. You just call somebody. So now you're still going to have to do that when you rent.
All I'm saying is I'm a big proponent of doors, doors, doors. Own. Get as many doors as you possibly can. So I'm not changing my tune, but I'm not disagreeing with Frank that as people start to age a little bit, renting is not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing.
Where's the cottage industry right now? Like, to my mind, I would see people in their golden years, getting into a condo, but keeping a cottage or buying a cottage to have somewhere to go in the summer.
Are
we seeing any of that?
Well, I mean, you can only have so much waterfront, right? So, I mean, there's a lot of people that, you know, when cottages come up, they do sell quite quickly. Problem being is there's a lot of people that don't have a lot of disposable income. So they're not looking for that second home and stuff like that. But you're right. So my plan is eventually to live at my cottage, sell my home, and have a place in Florida in the winter months and live at the cottage. And I think there's a lot of people that are doing that. There's a lot of people that live at the cottage and that is their home.
What about cottages as investments? Can you be cash flow positive with a cottage now, renting it out? Because you rent it out for more, but over a shorter period of time. Can you be cash flow positive with a cottage?
100% cash flow positive. Cottages are a cash cow when it comes to investment.
But you got to give up prime time to get the biggest dollar, biggest bang for your
buck,
right?
I'm talking strictly investment.
Strictly investment is different.
Yeah, strictly investment, I think it's an amazing investment. But you're right. If you know, years and years and years ago, I had a cottage on the Quebec side, and I used to rent it out July and August, and it would basically cover my mortgage for the year. The problem being is I gave up July and August, right?
But I'm saying you don't have the cottage because you want to spend time there as an investment. Plus, you don't get a bad tenant for more than a week or two.
Smart investment. It's a smart investment. And, I mean, there's, you know, you could get upwards of, depending on, you know, how many bedrooms and where you are and stuff like that. I've seen people renting these things out for, you know, $7,000-$9,000 a week. You know, it's a cash cow. It's a cash cow if you can pick up an investment. But then again, you're in the, I mean, unless you get a cleaning crew to do everything for you and stuff like that, you're now in the maintenance business and, you know, turning over and keep in mind people are, when they're renting a cottage for a week, they're not going up usually to have a nice quiet little read. They're going up to party and have friends over and stuff like that and boating and canoeing and everything. But it's still, it is probably one of the only cash flow positives positive investments in Ottawa.
Yeah, so. That's what I'm thinking. It's cash flow positive.
Yep.
With all of these problems we're hearing about tenants and landlords right now, you alleviate that problem because they're gone in a week or two or 3 weeks.
Yep. Yep. It's a smart investment.
So how many do you have?
Hey, I want to talk about the frenzy you talked about where, you know, at this time last year, Bank of Canada had halted the prime rate increase, and we saw this lift in property values and this. Now, I think the difference between last year and this year is that inflation hadn't quite capped yet, and there was still an abundance of people that had savings left over from the pandemic that allowed them to continue to live the lifestyle the way they were accustomed to. But what we've seen in the last 12 months is that people now are pulling back, less traveling, less, you know, items that you can do without, let's just call them. So, you know, I think that if interest rates come down this time around, I'm not sure the real estate frenzy is going to be as crazy as it was just a short 12 months ago. That's how much things change over a 12-month period. So I do think the price are going to go up, but that's why I don't believe the 10% number. Listen, it could still happen. I just don't believe it because I just think that it's so expensive to live outside of just your home that's what's going to pull people back.
I don't believe I'm going to say this because this pains me.
Uh-oh.
It pains me.
You said it four times already. Make it a fifth. This show.
50. He's going to be 50.
Yeah, that's true.
Frank.
That's true.
Frank is right.
Frank is right.
Frank, you are right. Oh, my God. Oh, man. Give me a garbage crick. I need to vomit. Yes, Frank is right. We will see an increase. I personally don't think we're going to see that 10% that people are predicting. You know, we're already at 5, but I predict that we're probably going to be somewhere in the 5-6% range, somewhere in that.
Still a good return.
It's still a great return, but yeah, we're not going to see what we saw at the start of 2022, where we went up, you know, 22%
we'll
one year, 19.9% the year after. The year before that, we went up 8.4%. So, you know, we went up 50% in 3 years. Yeah, those days it's not happening again in our lifetime.
And the average value of homes today, 3% or 4% is like it was pre-pandemic, 8 or 9%. Like that's the amount that it translates to. So when the average home was 450 and you got a 3% return, you were getting 12,000. Today the average home is 700. If you're getting a 3, it's 28,000.
Yeah.
So there's a big difference there. So I think the 3-4 is a nice, healthy number that I think could allow the housing market to continue to thrive. But if we see the 10%, I think it's going to pull the housing market back.
I think it will too. And we might see more rate increases if that happens, if they want to slow down the housing market. I think a nice healthy market is somewhere in the 3-5%.
Yeah, but nobody's saying 10% in this area.
No.
The 10% forecasts are Canada.
That's Canada-wide.
Toronto, Vancouver. And they figure Toronto this year is going to overtake Vancouver for the most valuable property.
Which seems absurd to me. It just does. I mean, there's more homeless people in Toronto. Every time I visit Toronto, there's more homeless people than the time before. It's absurd to me that Toronto continues to do what it does. It just goes beyond anything that's expected.
There's more immigrants going to Toronto than anywhere in Canada right now. Yeah. And let's be honest, immigrants are coming over with some money, right? So they're spending, and there's more people going to Toronto than anywhere in Canada.
Alberta's getting their fair share, actually. Alberta's population's gone up quite nicely because it's more affordable than Toronto is. And there is employment in Alberta, which has worked out really well for them.
Yeah.
All these people have to retire somewhere too, though. That's why I'm thinking this area here.
Maritimes are the place to go to retire. Most people, a lot of people are transitioning back to the Maritimes for retirement.
Even the prices in the Maritimes are starting to skyrocket.
But
compared to here, it's cheap. I mean, you could get. I remember years ago, my assistant Jocelyn, her parents had a place out east. And it was a gorgeous place on the water. And I remember she's like, yeah, you know, it's worth about 200 grand. And at the time, I'm like, that would be about $1 million here. What do you mean 200 grand?
Yeah.
You know? So I'm not sure what they are now, but I do know.
210.
But I do know the prices out in the East Coast are actually starting to go up as well.
521 Talk, 521-8255. Our last segment with a young Paul Rushforth is coming up next.
We return to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. All right, we talked a lot about first-time homebuyers. Are people moving up these days? Are they taking their existing mortgage and porting it and getting something a little bit bigger?
If they could. I mean, that's the ideal scenario, is to port a you know, we've got numerous clients that are still 2 years away at 1.79. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. But there's scenarios where they can't port it. An example, we had one this week where a gentleman has a 1.79 mortgage, 2 years left, but he became self-employed just a short 9 months ago. And therefore, the bank will not allow his father-in-law to be a guarantor. They want him to be a cosigner. And the father-in-law adamantly said, not a chance. So he had to give up his 1.79, be able to get a mortgage on the new house that they want with the father as with the father-in-law as guarantor, because he had no choice, because the bank would only allow for the father-in-law to be a cosigner, and the father-in-law wants nothing to do with cosigning.
He'll so not because he was porting, but because he was porting and needed more.
Well, even if you're porting. So I think a lot of people think if you port your mortgage, you're automatically approved. It doesn't work that way. Anytime you buy a new house, you're going through the application process again. So you still need to qualify. Port is because you've got an existing mortgage with an advantageous interest rate that you want to take with you. But it doesn't preclude you from having to qualify again for a mortgage.
But you've been approved for that mortgage.
No, you've been approved. Yes, you've been approved for that mortgage on that specific property under the circumstances at the time that you got approved for a mortgage. If you're buying another house today, you need to go through the whole qualifying process all over again. So,
but even if you're not getting adding to the mortgage,
the port is just the bank saying, hey, you signed the contract at this interest rate for this amount of time. It's portable. It does not have anything to do with the qualification. The qualification is totally different.
Yeah, but if the value of your new house is greater and you're only
doesn't matter.
The existing...
You need to qualify again.
I'm going to change these rules. I don't like this. I'm not saying it makes sense.
I'm just saying that those are the rules today. There's a lot of rules that don't make any sense in our industry right now. Way too many of them to even talk about on the show. I'd take a whole hour of the show. So many of them don't make any sense, but it's not about, you know, and I say to clients all the time, common sense has been out the window since that stress test got introduced, because OSFI went to the banks, and now the other thing, this 4.5-to-1 ratio, your income, you can only get 4.5. OSFI's giving out a little bit more details all the time. I mean, it doesn't come into effect until November, but they're giving out details where they're going to allow a bank to have a certain number that are over the 4.5, but they're going to be auditing them on a quarterly basis, and if they get too high on that number, they're going to tell them you can't do them anymore. So that's... You know, those are the kinds of things that we're seeing in our industry right now, which really are meant to protect the banks and protect the financial system in Canada, but it really hinders, and there's some unfairness to it sometimes, because, you know, you've got a self-employed person who makes a lot of money but doesn't necessarily pay themselves a lot, and all of a sudden they're on that scope where they don't qualify to get a mortgage or to get additional financing because they're above the 4.5 and the bank won't be able to do it. That's the kind of stuff that we need to get rid of.
Wow.
But we are still seeing those move-up buyers. Like, it's happening. There's a lot of people that had a lot of disposable income during COVID, and there's a lot of businesses that thrived during COVID. So there's still that market for the move-up buyers.
There's people that made money on those homes.
Absolutely.
Too.
And there's a lot of people that are, you know, the luxury market is still thriving. You know, every segment of the market is thriving. We're seeing the stronger markets are usually the older areas than the new areas. And it's because there's so much building and product going on. Even though I said at the start of the show, we're not getting enough shovels in the ground, but there is a lot of builders in suburbia, a lot of builders.
I'm seeing a lot of cranes in town, too.
Well, listen, where does a builder make money?
More doors and go up, right?
So that's what builders are doing. I mean, the townhomes, terrace homes, condos, apartments, that's where the builders make the money. These big 3,000 square foot singles. I mean,
there isn't such a thing as a freehold going up, is there? Do they all have to be condos? Or I'm just curious. I mean, that's the one thing that people say to me. I don't want to buy a condo because I don't want to be stuck with $400-$600 condo. Is there a way to get a two bedroom
without the fees?
Without the fees?
No, because you're sharing everything. You're sharing the electricity in the common areas. You're sharing. So no, there's no way to.
But there are cheaper ones, right? There are areas where they only take care of the outside and.
Oh yeah, like a lot of areas in suburbia where you have a lot of these track builders. The condo fees will be relatively inexpensive, but they don't cover much. They're going to cover snow plowing, grass cutting,
the roof,
you know, maintenance, but they're not covering a lot of extra stuff. And those condo fees might be, you know, anywhere from 130 to 170.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to have one of these high rise condominiums where your condo fees are, you know, $600, $700, $800, $900 a month. There's a reason they're $600, $700, $800, $900 a month.
Yeah, because if you're in a smaller place, you're not getting the pool, you're not getting the exercise room, you're not getting all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Birthdays, Frank.
Got a few. Lionel Zaitsman, our South African IT guy, celebrating his birthday this week. My beautiful niece, Nadia, celebrating her birthday, as well as longtime family friend, Maria Cucinato Ranieri, celebrating her 60th birthday today. So happy birthday. And just want to give a little shout out for a poker tournament that I'm holding in honor of my dad. I'm hoping we can get Paul and Steve out because there'll be some extra prizes if you can knock them out of the game.
Oh, for seniors?
yeah. But poker tournament, you can go to mortgagebrokersottawa.com/charity. It's held on May 10th and raising money for, and my dad was big at the giving back to the community, so raising money for the hospice, Ottawa Food Bank, and Villa Marconi.
Is there not another birthday?
Yeah, is there nobody else? Is there anybody else who want to wish a happy birthday to,
it's
Frank?
Still
anybody?
10 days away, so we were going to do it next
but
week.
But we won't see him.
Yeah, but we'll hear him. Somehow he's going to call in.
I'll be calling in from Mexico. I might not sound great, but I'll be calling in.
But speaking of next week, we've got a special guest, Tanya Woods, who is government relations for Questrade. She'll be in studio since Paul won't be. She'll be in studio with us. And we're going to be talking about the budget that comes out on Tuesday, and she'll break it down for us. So that'll be an awesome show.
No birthdays?
I still never heard anyone wish me happy birthday.
Well, we are next week. You're going to call in.
No, we're waiting until after you do your birthdays.
Yes.
To give it the time it deserves. Oh, we're out of time.
Yeah. I'm good.
Happy birthday, Polly.
Yes.
Thank you.
Last show in your 40s.
Yeah,
wow.
Thank you, guys. Wow. Appreciate it.
Have a great week.